most important, for this discussion at least, his behind-the-scenes inquiries, both official and unofficial, into the mystery of UFOs. This new book, I think, is an important work, and in my opinion, even though I, too, like everyone else who's read it so far, find things in it that I have trouble buying, but that's why we have shows like this, to hash those things out. Dr. John Alexander, great to have you back on the program.
George, and I just want to say you were right. Well, in your blur, you know, they should know you provided a blur, but in there you said and predicted correctly that we were going to hammer both sides, and they have certainly jumped up in a lively debate.
And quickly, too.
Yeah.
This image of you, John, I want to start this. The image of you that exists in the world of ufology, in case the listeners don't know, the nickname Dr. Death, and the idea of you as sort of a man in black type spooky character. You show up at UFO conferences, and it's like you're haunting them. Presumably, they think you're there spying on UFO researchers. Am I correct in saying that you are not entirely unhappy with some of that kind of speculation?
Well, I don't know. Elmer Green, who was the guy who did it, EEG biofeedback a long time ago, once told me something, and he said, you know, it doesn't do you any good to hold a cold potato.
But, I mean, you know, I mean, you must get a kick out of a little bit that people ascribe to you all these ulterior motives and the idea that you're working for all kind of sinister masters.
Yeah, it is, and I keep telling them, particularly the ones who put me in MJ-12, if that's true, I sure wish they'd catch up on their paychecks, because I haven't seen any.
Let's start with the basic premise of the book. I mean, I am correct. I don't know if you heard the introduction before the break, but am I correct in describing you as not hostile to the UFO topic in general? You just don't believe there's anybody minding the store.
That's pretty accurate. The first line of the book is UFOs are real. And I mean that, you know, in the most direct sense, that there are hard physical objects that transit the universe from time to time. Basically, every sensor we have picks them up. You know, John Lear said that I was the new Phil Klass. And on that, I had to go in and count. I said, I've supported cases. I can't imagine Phil Klass supporting UFO cases. So,
well, that's true. But what do you think they are? I mean, I know you have the literal definition in the book where you say, literally, they're unidentified. We don't know what they are. Do you have a theory on what they represent, some
well,
of them?
No, and as you know from the book, and they should get it and read it, because I do take on the extraterrestrial hypothesis and just say, frankly, that's too simple. And part of the problem is, describe for me a UFO, because we have in there everything from little tiny balls of light to huge craft more than a mile across, and everything in between. So, you know, I do not come up with any single solution that can answer all of the observations that are seen. I think there's going to be no simple answer to this. And, in fact, I end with a book saying, you know, I think the universe is more complex than we ever imagined, and that we're closer to, you know, trying to figure out what the right question should be as opposed to what the answers are.
You take on directly, though, maybe the second most cherished belief in ufology, and that is the idea of the government cover-up. While you acknowledge that some of these cases are very interesting, you smash this one in little tiny pieces, saying there just is nobody minding the store, there is no cover-up, you don't believe in MJ-12, and basically you identify... You talk about conspiracy theorists who are always talking about the, quote, great unidentified they, meaning, you know, sort of the hodgepodge of all the different kinds of people involved in this cover-up. Give me the basic premise of that.
Well, as you know, we, for a while, were studying this with the ad hoc group inside the government, sort of thought the same thing. Somebody was there in charge, and what I found was, nope, that's not true. Now, the conspiracy theorists, it's interesting that the public in general, first of all, does not believe the government, you know, on anything. The credibility is exceedingly low.
And with good justification.
Oh, I don't agree or don't disagree with that. I think that there's really good cause for that. But because of that, there's high degree of speculation. problem that I have is they view the government generally as incompetent across the board, except for UFOs where they're omniscient. And, you know, the twains just don't go together.
Yeah, they're bad at everything, except for when it comes to this, they've been really, really great at managing the control of the information.
Correct. And getting information that, you know, they can have absolutely controlled everything across political lines. And, you know, you watch what's going on in Congress now, trying to get people to, you know, agree to anything. In part, it's a highly partisan political situation. And yet this one is exempt for some reason.
I thought the best part of the book is the stuff in the early going where you describe your meetings with these various agencies as you go from place to place, office to office, trying to track down who the UFO control group might be. And I want to get into each one of those, but before we do, I want to give a little bit more background on how you end up in this position where you are essentially hunting for whoever is controlling the information.
Well,
It's a lot of circumstance that leads to this.
There were. I mean, you know, I had a rather unique military history. Technically, I was an infantry officer who had two tours ever in the infantry because I spent more time with special forces and intelligence and research and development. So got to know a lot of very interesting people. I ended up, I described in the book, where I was the director of advanced systems concepts at the Army Materiel Command. We had something then called the Army Research Lab, and so had a broad breadth of technology that happened to come under my purview. So I knew people both inside and outside. Now, I've always had a personal interest in this. I go back to, 1947? I was old enough to actually, you know, remember some of those first reports coming out firsthand.
Kenneth Arnold, you did a radio report in your school or something, right?
Yep. As a young kid, I was in a unique school as well. And we got to, as kids, got to choose what programs we wanted to broadcast, and I remember doing one on UFOs. And like I say, that's 1947. So the interest was there, and the opportunity came along to kind of check it out. So we decided to do it and do it carefully. We had all of the very special clearances and that sort of thing. And since we thought that, well, maybe somebody's got a big black program, that we had to handle it responsibly. And as you know, the group had people from almost all the military services, the various intelligence agencies, and a lot of private aerospace as well. And the one thing, this is where Jacques Vallée and I agree, is that as we started doing the briefings, we found the agencies were more interested in what other people were doing and what they might know, as opposed to what is the phenomena itself.